În aprilie are loc în zona voastră tranziția la televiziunea digitală terestră și avem nevoie de implicarea tuturor. Cunoașteți pe cineva care are nevoie de ajutor pentru a trece la televiziunea digitală? Dacă au vârstă de cel puțin 75 de ani sau suferă de deficiențe de vedere sau sunt beneficiari altor ajutoare pentru dizabilități, atunci pot primi asistență practică gratuită. Tot ceea ce trebuie să facă este să răspundă scrisorii primite din partea programului de asistență pentru tranziția digitală. Dacă știți pe cineva care se încadrează...
But you remove all responsibility. You want me to be part of your community, but then you go and isolate me. Positively, while you're degrading me. Stop me from behaving violently, putting me where there is violence all around me. Subjecting me to cruelty. You operate a system of hypocrisy with your breeding ground for criminality.
With no rehabilitation prison. and welcome on Resonance 104.4 FM on the Circle Day Show. Tonight's show is about prison. Prisons are cages where we put all the undesirables away. The degree of civilization in a society can be judged by entering its prisons. And jails and prisons are designed to break human beings, to convert the population into specimens, into a zoo, obedient to our keepers, but dangerous to each other. That was Angela Davis who said that. And tonight we have people that know all too well about the subject. Charlie Ryder, he was an ex-political prisoner. And we also have Carl Catamol, ex-inmate, author of HMP, A Survival Guide. First question, what are your tales of the prison system?
Okay, I'll go first. Thanks for having us on the show.
Well, thank you for coming.
I guess I'll start by maybe explaining a bit about why I went to prison. I was involved in a violent protest against the British National Party bookshop in Welling in 1993. It was to shut down their bookshop after the murders of Stephen Lawrence and the murders of Roland Adams and Roald Dougal all happened within the vicinity or close to where this bookshop was. So 50,000 of us marched to shut down this bookshop. And when we got to the bookshop, we were met by riot police who basically set about beating up demonstrators. And I was hit over the head, hit in the stomach. And I responded by hitting back at the police, and I threw bricks and I threw some stones at police riot shields. And I left having a bump on my head and having seen lots of people really badly injured due to the police brutality that day. And a couple of months later, I was at home with my mum and my neighbour. Mum's Irish, my next door neighbour's West Indian. And I was on Crime Monthly, a programme which appeals to some of Britain's most wanted criminals, as suspect number three. And yeah, so it was quite a shock, really. I remember my mum turned, it was a really surreal moment as well, because my mum, being Irish, she was like, "Oh, Jesus, I told you not to go on that demonstration, but you never listened to your mother. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou, Jesus. I've spoken to Jesus, and you're not going to prison." And my neighbour went, "Oh, God, Charlie, boy, you better run, boy, run. Leave the country, oh, God." At which moment I kind of was just thinking, this is really surreal, and thinking about could I run, should I stay? My brother was arrested that same morning, so the police came around to check the bail address, and my mum thought they'd come for me, but they hadn't come for me, so I was arrested and waited nearly 2 years before I was sent to prison for 16 months. Very briefly, I'll say that I was taken down from court. I was locked into into a prison van, which felt like a really small cupboard, really hard to breathe. On reception, being stripped was humiliating, and it was abuse. Having to show prison officers my foreskin was terrifying, and it was abuse, really. And I'll finish this bit in answer really to the question, and it's a poem called Prisoners that really captured my experience. And it said, "Prisoners, we want them to have self-worth, so we destroy their self-worth. To be responsible, so we take away all responsibility. To be part of our community, so we isolate them from the community. To be positive and constructive, so we degrade them and make them useless. To be non-violent, so we put them where there is violence all around. To be kind and loving people, so we subject them to hatred and cruelty. To quit being tough guys, so we put them where the tough guy is respected. To quit hanging around losers, so we put all the losers under one roof. To quit exploiting us, so we put them where they exploit each other. We want them to take control of their own lives, own their own problems, and quit being parasites, so we make them totally dependent on us." That poem was written by Judge Dennis Shaleen, Supreme Court USA.
Do you want to come in, Carl?
Yeah. Oh, wow. This is really hard to kind of describe, you know, nearly a year in prison in a paragraph. But it's just a surreal experience. It goes from everything from being hilariously funny, you know, like I've written about some of the experiences I had and some of the hilarity in the publication I wrote. And yeah, it's kind of, it can be soul destroying as well. You know, I spent like a good 9.5, 10 months, 23 hours a day locked up on my own. You know, they moved me up to Birmingham, which is, my family's nowhere near there, getting a visit twice a month, and yeah, it's just a difficult kind of experience to sum up in only a paragraph, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Well, safe to say it does break you. Well, it's supposed to break you.
It doesn't I don't think it broke me at all. Mm. It actually made me, it vindicated my hate for a lot of things, including the state, you know? Before I had a kind of a mild hatred. Afterwards, I came out fully vindicated and way more radicalised. So
it's true,
that's what prison actually serves to do, you know. Quite a lot of the time, police brutality, or you know, police just taking the piss, because more than just beyond you know, police brutality, they'll put you on bail for a year. You know, you don't know what's going to happen to you after that period comes to a close. They can do that. They can put all types of conditions on your bail without even having evidence against you, without even having a charge against you. So it's more than just physical kind of damage that the police seek to do to you and have the kind of legal warrant to, you know, to do to you.
Yeah, no, that was actually something great you just said, like, that's what happens to like prisoners. The structure of it is really harmful. It doesn't actually, like, people that are pro prison that really haven't looked at it properly. Yeah. They think it's like rehab almost. You know, like
Or on the other end of the scale, they can think that it's extremely damaging. Like they're gonna get walked through the door and get raped and get beaten up and, you know, become someone's bitch. Which isn't the case either. Sorry, that's not a swear word.
It's a female dog, yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that having that opinion is seriously harmful as well, because when you get there, really, yeah, the spending time, a lot of time on your own is bad for you, but none of that stuff actually happens. It's like in America, you know, the media portrayal of American prisons suggests that, you know, it's going to be way worse and everyone, you know. But actually, I have a friend who's in New York State Penitentiary at the moment. And he says it's all good. It's not ideal. It's not a good situation. But that's what I'd like people to realise, that if prison is the worst thing that society, that the government can do to you to take away your liberty, then, yeah. You know, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it does really radicalise you. It does the opposite of what...
It really radicalises you. It's a reading holiday.
Yeah, So one way of looking at it, which is the best way to look at it, really, especially if you find yourself in those shoes. We can see how in history the empire could extract free labour unchallenged and unquestioned, pretty much, from lawbreakers. What may be the benefits of keeping up the apparatus of denying a person their freedom today? Any ideas about that?
I think one of the things that the benefits is it keeps people in a state of, especially around protests and things. It's kind of it's used as a way to scare people from protesting and standing up to protest. And with the recent demonstrations that have been happening, it's been extreme draconian sentencing for doing very little. And we have the case at the moment that's going to court of Alfie Meadows, who was horrifically assaulted.
He's hospitalised by police.
Yeah. And now he finds himself on a charge for being a victim of a crime. As far as I'm aware, I think Michael Mansfield has come out of retirement to represent him, but he's not the only one. There are other people who are facing the same thing for being victims of crime. They're now on a charge, and because they're I don't know that, so that's maybe an example of where I think it's being used, this fear factor is being used to control people and to stop them from protesting it's awful, and I think sadly, because we don't have in this country, I don't think we have a really good media, or that if we did, it would be an outrage. People would be outraged that someone has been the victim of a crime and has been almost killed on a demonstration.
And then now they're the one facing prison.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, talking of forced prison labour, I mean, it's not to the extent of America, but while I was in one prison, the prison I talked about near Birmingham, they enforced that you worked in a copper mill for a private company, shredding up copper for 8 hours a day for, okay, prison wages range from anything from £3.50 to 10 quid a week. Now, that private company is getting value for labour, and...
That actually leads me to the next question. But also, I just want to say that, like, finishing off, it's like they try and make an example of somebody, that protester, someone, you know, to prevent us from, like, challenging the system in any sort of way. And sometimes I've noticed that people that commit the lesser crime go down for longer sometimes, and that is like. But that is to say, look, whatever you do, it doesn't go unnoticed. So then, again, it prevents any kind of... it makes people think twice about even turning up at demonstrations. Yeah. It has a deep, deep, like, impact on like, liberties of being able to so-called go on demos and you know, demonstrate. That's supposed to be a right, but who would want to go if you're kettled for 8 hours and then, you know, slung in a in a van and then, you know, indefinitely, like...
Which, yeah, it's just... It's... Sorry. Am I interrupting you?
No, I'm not. Please, like, yeah. Okay, well, let me go on to the next question, because we were talking about privatisation and a little bit. So how do you think privatisation will impact the prisons?
Well, I think that, it's obviously a no-brainer, isn't it? Like, if you read more into the prison industrial complex, which is a complicated way of saying a very simple thing, which is that prisoners are kept in jail to make money for private business. And there's a great author that you quoted at the start, Angela Davis, who's an ex Black Panther and spent time in prison. She knows, she can, you know, if you want to read into the subject of the prison industrial complex, she's the woman. But it really exists in Britain in 2012, you know.
I think if it becomes, it's just about money and about, then you're going to see that within the companies that the ones that have been accepted, they'll be the ones that can put forward, according to when it's done within profit, so the cheapest. So it means that the it means that I don't know. I see there'll be a lot of corruption and a lot of things that are wrong in terms of quality of what people get while they're inside, because it's important to note that people that are in prison are vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And so the vulnerable people, for example, if you've got vulnerable people that are being treated by people who very often who are being recruited according to the cheapest price, then they're not going to be given the support. So if someone, for example, is suicidal, and you've got somebody who is employed and is just employed according to, because they're cheap, then they're not going to be able to deal with the situations, and also they're going to, I think that they'll end up escalating situations and make situations worse, rather than having someone who's got experience and training. So yeah. I think anything for me that it ends up being about kind of profit making. I mean, you just have to look at groups, for example, like A4E, and see what they're doing, the corruption that exists within them of the things that they're doing. And so, if you leave things to those types of companies, then you're setting yourself up really for corruption and for people that are motivated by greed.
Yeah, because the prime objective, it's obvious, isn't it? That the prime objective is. It's obvious that the prime objective of a private company is to, you know, make efficiencies where possible, but that philosophy is not compatible with providing a prison system which helps to rehabilitate people. So I think the two things are just, you know, deeply misaligned. Private profiteering and helping people and helping society to have less criminals, you know, more reformed people. You know, that there's no mesh.
The the degrading aspect of being put in prison, like, do you think prison reflects the power structure we live in outside? So, like, you have a guard with all this power, the keys to the locks, and then you have the prisoner, no matter what they did, and then they're powerless. So can you see that fitting into the out, to the world we live in today? So could you just maybe...
Yeah, well, I think I'd say that you're treated like human waste. You're treated by human waste in the way that the other prisoners sometimes will talk to you, by the way the prison officers view you, by the way that your uniform, by the way that you're a prison number. And and the people that are in prison, very often we have a huge number of people with mental health problems. We have people that have addiction problems. As I said kind of before, it's our most vulnerable that are have ended up inside prison, and they don't fit kind of what the televisions and newspapers portray them as.
Yeah.
And I think that's sadly, if we started to change our perception and started to see that these are vulnerable people who need healing and need to find ways of healing from the damage that they've had in their lives and in the addictions that they've experienced. They've been victims of crime very often in their lives. And what they need is a bit of love, a bit of compassion, a bit of unconditional love, instead of a kind of a system that's just actually about brutally kind of treating them, or ill-treating them, and just locking them up for long periods and making them angry and resentful.
That was my experience as well. So many psychologically ill people in prison for crimes which so-called crimes which quite obviously relate to their psychological illness, which should be treated in a psychological hospital rather than, you know, the way in which they are at the moment. You know, there was people who would call out like a cat all night long.
Wow.
You'd wake up 4 a.m. and they'd still be going. Then you'd all get unlocked and they'd jump off the top landing. Prisons go in a kind of a central landing around the ground floor, and then they have nets between each landing so people can't commit suicide.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe, you know, there's 2 floors where there aren't any. And this person would jump off repeatedly over and over again off of this landing. And this was day in, day out, every day while I was in this one jail for 4 months.
Yeah.
And that's just... That's someone quite obviously who needs help, not prison.
Do you maybe, could you read that bit of when you got a chance?
I'd say that the importance of writing letters. So for anyone that's listening, if there's Defend the Right to Protest, have got a site, and there's Anarchist Green Black Cross, they've got a Facebook site. An Anarchist Black Cross to write to people inside, because when you get a letter has got humanity, it's got dignity written all over it, and I describe it as kind of being like a lighthouse that's putting a light out to a ship that's in the seas, that's kind of finding life really, really difficult. And when you get that light comes between you, there's something really lovely about it from both sides, and I think both people experience that, and it means the world. And so for me, I received a letter of support from a Holocaust survivor called Leon Greenman, who was also at the same demonstration. And when he wrote to me, he wrote via the Anti-Nazi League, "Of course I feel more bitter about what the judge, police and other people connected with the law who sentenced the 9 men to prison. The above mentioned obviously do not understand that these men were marching against a danger towards mankind. One day the wrong will be righted again when the above men of law are confronted with the danger, as I have been, with loss of everything dear to me. I feel bitter and sick inside because of the injustice, without feeling and understanding towards the fighters for freedom and justice. With all respect and hope for better understanding to all mentioned here in my letter, yours sincerely, Leon Greenman, Auschwitz survivor 98288. And I'll just quickly say that if anyone's got the chance, the Jewish Museum in London, there's an exhibition of Leon's life, because he died 2 years ago. And one of the things that he said that I think is really important, he said that if I had survived to betray the dead, it would have been better not to survive. There is no difference in colour or religion. If I had survived to betray the dead, it would have been better not to survive. We must not forget. Please do not forget. And I think that it's really important to remember that that, and to remember that the what happened, and what groups like the British National Party and EDL, that they're coming from the same place of evil as Nazis. So
look at what's happened in France over the last couple of days, you know. It's just, but yeah, that's I think that the one thing that everyone should do if they've got a friend, well, actually, you know, even if you don't know someone, that's even more important.
Yeah.
If you get a letter from someone who you don't know, all you need is their name. You don't actually need their prison number. You just need their name and the address of their prison. It's that easy to send a letter to them. And you know, like, when you're sitting there on your own 23 hours a day and a letter comes under your door, you are so happy. It makes your day. You can't actually
really
underestimate it when you're a free person. You know, it's strange for me to kind of consider how much every letter actually meant to me. And you know, whether it's a heartfelt letter about what you've been up to, don't you know, pity them. You know, I'm sure they get enough of that from themselves.
Yeah.
Talk about what you've been up to. Or, you know, send them funny pictures off the internet. I don't know if anyone knows about lolcats or whatever. Or someone, people just used to send me stupid pictures. But you don't have the internet when you're inside. And, you know, getting, like, these ridiculous drawings or, like, whatever. Just send people a piece of your mind.
Yeah.
And they'll never forget that, really.
Yeah. I sent one of my friends that went down. He was an anti-fascist and he got sent down. And I sent him a picture of me holding Rosabella. We went to like a show, like an art show, and there was like a picture of Margaret Thatcher's face on it, like a painting of her. And I was like, let me just pose with Rosabella. And he cracked up and he put it up on his wall.
Yeah, that's what just, I mean.
Because, you know, like,
people sent me, you know, some silly picture that took them 2 seconds to print out on their printer, and it remained on my wall for 9 months of my sentence. that's what I'm saying. A small thing outside becomes a very big thing in your cell.
Definitely. So I guess you touched upon like what practical things we can do in order to help people that find themselves in there. Poor people are people that like make up the majority of the inmates in comparison to people that have money. Just very quickly, what do you think that statistics tells us?
For me, I think there's some.
One minute.
Okay. I think, you know, the system, particularly for people within poor areas. That you hear there are teachers that can basically say, look, I know that person is going to end up inside. So we're failing these people, and that they should be given support from a young age, and they should be given an opportunity to be creative and healing. I come back to healing again, but I just think that the healing and creativity and changing our education system to actually that meets the needs of people and meets the needs younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A stitch in time saves nine. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Investment in people in the first place.
Yeah.
Stops them from going on to worse things in the end of things. And I'd just like to say, you know, it's not plugging my thing because I'm not making any money out of it, obviously, but HMP, a survival guide, it's free online. It's totally free. Printed copies are free from 56A Info Shop in Elephant and Castle. But prisonism.info, that's prisonism.info. And yeah, it's a pamphlet designed to help anyone who's expecting a prison sentence with the practicalities, you know, everything from how to cope with it emotionally to what to take.
Great.
Anyway.
Thank you so much, both of you. I've really like enjoyed the show, and Sally, this is the end of the show. Thank you to all my guests. An insight on a complicated issue that affects all of our lives. Next week is another topic. This track that you heard early on is, and I'll play again, is by Charlie, who's sitting next to me, called Prison. Until next time, turn on, tune in, and kick off.